The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road, but if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge and enjoy 10 smoke-free, spit-free days for just $5.95. Order online and start your new journey today. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Bubble and squeak, I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every morning. Left over from the night before.
Ho, 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 my holiday listeners. Welcome to a very special holiday edition of Off the Beat. Tis the season. I am your host, Brian Baumgartner. Today, we're going to do things a little bit differently because I don't know if you've noticed, but it's almost January already, which means it's almost 2023, which means that I am just this close to making an entire trip around the sun with Off the Beat. Now, I have to tell you all, this blows my mind. Week after week, I have gotten to talk to some of the most incredible people from some of my absolute favorite film and TV shows. And you all, you're out there listening. You have made this all possible. I truly could not be more grateful for each and every one of you for coming on this journey with me. I am having a blast. I hope you continue to have a blast as well. So my special gift to you, we put together a couple of best of episodes for Off the Beat, featuring just a very small sampling of the hilarious, emotional, and inspirational, if I do say so myself, interviews that I've put on this year. This is by no means a comprehensive list. There are some truly fan-freaking-tastic guests you're not going to be hearing from, but 'tis the season for reflection, for looking back and looking forward. So we're going to do just that, starting with some of my very first guests, and one in particular who I had happened to cross paths with on a boat. Well, maybe more of a booze cruise while filming The Office. So here he is, my good friend, Rob Riggle, with the story of what it was like to play the iconic Captain Jack.
Of course, I can't not mention Captain Jack, your role on The Office, coming out to film what was, without a doubt, the most difficult film week that we had in 10 years. There's no question. There's no question. Working from 7 p.m. to like 7 a.m. out on the water.
It was.
Were you aware of The Office when you got that job? What was your awareness?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Okay.
So I was very aware of the BBC version. While I was on SNL, we're on, the writers are on 17 and the studio's down on 8. And on 16, they have a casting directors and stuff. I actually auditioned for Michael Scott.
I knew this. Yes.
And I auditioned for Dwight and Koechner's role.
Packer.
I forget his name. Packer. They made the right choice, obviously. But I was fresh in their minds because I think I did the episode that I did, the Booze Cruise, before I got the Daily Show.
The Daily Show.
So that gap between SNL and when I got the Daily Show.
Okay.
That's when I got the Office role, which I was so happy to get and so honored. And for me, it was super cool because, one, I love the show. It was your guys' second season, I think.
That's right.
The show's a hit. Everybody knows it. Everybody's loving it. And I was one of them. I was like, more and more. And I get to be part of it, which was great. But I'm still so green as an actor and as a performer. Being on camera still made me nervous. I'm nervous as hell. And when we got out on the water, remember when we floated out, between setups, normally everybody goes back to the trailer. They go back to Crafty. Kind of everybody separates and gets their space. There was nowhere to go on that boat. When they'd say, okay, we're setting up for it, moving on, it's time for a new shot. They'd go to set up. We all just go sit on the dance floor or sit in those booths.
Those booths.
And hang out. Yeah, those booths. And I remember thinking, this is awesome. I just remember enjoying the hell out of it and not even dawning on me that we were Dusk Till Dawn.
Right.
And it was draining. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Carell was shooting Evan Almighty. And he would literally leave. We'd pull back to the dock. He would get out, get in a sedan, and drive to film all day. And I remember thinking, when's this guy getting his sleep? This is insane.
Yeah.
And yet his performance on the boat, and I'm sure his performance in the movie, fantastic.
Yeah.
But it was total fun. One thing about that episode that bums me out to this day.
Okay.
For whatever reason, I don't know, maybe it was the devil, maybe evil demon angel. Somebody would not let me get the words Wall and Paw Pack out of my mouth.
That's right.
I couldn't say it.
Wall and Paw Pack.
I couldn't say it.
That's right.
We were supposed to be on Lake Wall and Paw Pack. I can say it now,
right,
as if it's nothing. I can say it with ease. That night, I maybe got it out once or twice correctly, and the rest, I just couldn't do it. And I remember they were looking at me, and they were baffled. They were absolutely baffled. Like, what is this guy's major malfunction? How can you not say Wall and Paw Pack? And I can't explain it. It's just one of those moments where you're like, I'm so sorry. I wanted to die. I wanted to go crawl. I wanted to dive off that boat and die.
Well, first of all, everyone has been there. I have not thought about that in 15 years. And you and I see each other, I don't know, 10 times a year at various things. I have not ever once thought of that moment until right now. And the second you said it, I was like, oh, that's right. He couldn't say it.
Oh. I couldn't say it. I couldn't say it right. And I know it was so simple. And they were looking at me and go, Wall and Paw Pack. I go,
Wall and
just Wall and Wall Paw Pack? Wall Paw? I mean, really, there was some synapses in my brain that would not connect it. And you know, Brian, as an actor, the drive home,
I said
every line perfectly.
Oh,
I said every word perfectly. I mean, I couldn't have been more spot on the drive home.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. That is amazing. Do you get recognized? Do people yell Captain Jack at you?
Every now and then, yes. Okay. Yes, they do.
Okay.
I was probably, no joke, probably 40, 50 pounds heavier then.
Right.
So I looked a little different then.
Yeah, interesting. That episode, by the way, it was shared with me or reminded by Kevin Riley, actually, who was the head of NBC at the time, that he would call about the ratings after every night. And obviously The Office became a big show for him and he kind of staked his reputation on it. And after Booze Cruise, The Office didn't just retain the number from My Name is Earl, which came before, but actually beat it in the ratings. And he said,
wow.
I may have cried. It was like that kind of moment for him, like that episode. So significant.
You know, the only thing that other than not being able to say Wall and Paw Pack, which still haunts me. I mean, I still feel so bad about that. I was bummed out because I knew that once my episode was over, you wouldn't see Captain Jack again. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and they're not going to bring me back as some other character.
Right.
Because I always wanted to be reoccurring on The Office just because it's such an iconic, legendary show. But I won't be greedy. I was very grateful for the opportunity to be Captain Jack.
Well, look, I mean, during that time and just setting the office aside, you were really on, had the opportunity to appear on every great show during that time with, you know, all due respect to the ones you weren't on. But I mean, Arrested Development and 30 Rock and Modern Family and just amazing, all of the shows that you were on during that time and obviously recurred on a lot of them.
Yeah, I was very happy about that, very blessed. But The Office is definitely special.
Well, yes, it is for me too.
Absolutely, it should be.
Ah, yes, the great Lake Wallen Paw Pack, or Lake Wallen Pee Pack. And that is what we call in the business a transition to my next guest, who was actually my very first guest on this podcast. She had her own special audition story that was not haunted, but perhaps helped by a certain kind of energy. Here she is with the story, Allison Hannigan, everyone.
I remember my manager calling me before I read the script, and he's like, okay, we're sending you the script. You're either going to love it or hate it. Nobody, like, that's just how it's going. People can't stand it or they love it. So I loved it. And he was saying, take a look at, you know, whatever role, because all the roles were open, and see which one you like. Oh, I think it was actually between
Heather and Michelle.
Yeah, exactly. Heather and Michelle. Yes. And I was like, no, I love Michelle. And just immediately like wanted to do that part. And so I went to the audition. It was casting. It was just me and the casting director. And he told me, no, she can't be that quirky. Like, take out all the, you know, all the quirk, just take that away. And because we want these two to be together or whatever. And I was like, oh, okay. I mean, it's written in question form. Every line has a question mark at the end of the sentence. And so I was like, oh, all right. Well, that's weird because that's definitely not how I pictured it.
Right.
And so I did it again, just super boring. And he was like, okay, great. I'm going to bring you back for the directors. And that's great. And I got on the phone to my manager. I was like, they said that they're going to bring me back for the directors, but honestly, I don't want to go because if he wants me to do it like that, I just, that's not going to be funny. And right. So they were like, yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, let's just see if you get the call back and talk to us then. And so I did. And the call back, my managers took me to lunch right before, maybe to butter me up to go to the callback. I don't know why, but we were at lunch and I had like 7 iced teas or something ridiculous. And then I sat in traffic on my way to the callback and I had to pee like I've never had to pee before. And I just remember kind of, then you have to go through, it's on the back lot of Universal and trying to find the bungalow. I was going to wet my pants. And so I was like, well, I don't want to be late. I'll sign in and then run to the bathroom. So I did that. And I'm like, I went to the bathroom, washing my hands. And the assistant comes in to the bathroom and says, okay, we're ready for you. I'm like, oh, all right.
What?
So I never.
Comes into the bathroom?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, she, yes. Thank God I wasn't in the stall still. So I dry my hands, but I never had time to settle down. I still had that I'm going to wet my pants energy. And so I just went in and I never even decided if I was going to do it boring or the way I wanted to do it. And because I had that like hyper pee energy, I just did it the way I wanted to do it. And I got the job.
There you go.
And I'm sure the casting director appreciates me telling that story.
But I think that shows a boldness from you, whether it was intentional or not, right? So like it was just about the pee or whatever. But if you read the script.
Did you think this morning that you would say if it was just about the pee?
Sorry. It was just about the pee, just about Allison Hannigan's pee. No, yeah. But I mean like there are times you read something and you see it. Clearly. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you did.
Yeah.
There were multiple roles available for your choosing, at least to audition. And you saw a character and you saw the role. And they said, well, no, they want it like this. Well, that's not you, right?
No. Well, I mean, that's not what I wanted to do. I really, right. Like, I had so much fun just being weird and like talking in question form. It was so much fun. And then, like,
so
to, funny. No, 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 be just lose the quirk and, and just like, you know, we want that, to root for them to be together. I'm like, what? But I didn't see it that way. And I'm so not normally like that either. I'm very much like, okay, what do you want? I'm your puppet, you know? So I guess that was just, no, this is how I would want to play it. It also helped that I was on Buffy and it wasn't like, I have to get this part. You know, it was like, hey, that'd be great. It's a small part in this movie I thought was really funny, but it wasn't like, oh, this is going to change your life. Or, you know, you didn't know that at the time. So the stakes weren't that high and I had a job to go back to. So that gave me a confidence that I didn't normally have.
And see, that's so important too.
Mm-hmm. I know. And you know that because people always say, act like you don't care about the job. But you can't.
Well, you have to truly not care. You have to truly not care.
Exactly. Well, and I'm so grateful that I had a crappy agent for Buffy because they weren't able to give me the script. So I only had the sides. And had I read the script, I would have completely lost my mind and I wouldn't have... there's no way I could have gotten it because I would have wanted it so desperately. So I'm really glad that when I got the script, I was like, oh, I won the lottery.
That you did, Allison, that you did. But you're not the only one who had a less than ideal audition end up changing your life. Here's my next guest, my old friend, Eric Stonestreet, with what could only be described as an aggressive casting experience.
The producer in Chicago that had helped me get my SAG card by doing three backgrounds, she's like, when I was moving, she said, oh, I have a friend that is a casting associate for somebody in LA, and I'll give you her name. That was the only professional name I came to town with. And she was nice enough to accept my headshot. And she's like, yeah, we'll call you in. You know, if something comes up, we'll give you a call. And she called me in, and it took me, you know, maybe four or five times of going in for, I can't think of his name, biggest producer in town, TV-wise, Big Bang Theory.
Chuck Lorre.
Yeah, Chuck Lorre. It took me like four or five times going in and getting called back, and finally I got a little part on Dharma and Greg, and that was really the beginning. But I didn't, you know anybody, but again, it all comes down to people just being nice and like giving you a shot.
Right. I think for me, a big lesson you learn is how important just like the number of jobs you get, regardless of what they are, right? So there's like commercials and there's this show and that show, and you start to build a career. I know you did a lot of commercials. I hear over 100 commercials you did after arriving in Los Angeles.
Well, I did a national campaign in Chicago for the NCAA where I played this character named Joe Football, where I was painted red and blue. And then that helped me get a commercial agent in LA. And then I was lucky enough one day to meet a guy named Joe Pitka.
Okay.
And Joe Pitka is a legendary commercial director in Los Angeles. And I went in and I auditioned for an American Express Tiger Woods commercial where the ball's traveling all over the world. And I was just a guy on a tee box somewhere and the ball lands and I smash the ball. So I go into this audition. And before I went in, my agent called me and was like, you're auditioning for Joe Pitka. I'm like, okay, what does that mean? She's like, you don't know who Joe Pitka is? I'm like, no, what do I need to do right now? Do I need to pull over? What's happening? She's like, no, he's very intimidating. He's very scary. You know, he's very loyal. Just be cool, be calm. Don't poke the bear. I'm like, what the hell? So I go in and I audition for this Tiger Woods commercial where it's like, I don't even think I have lines. He just was like looking me up and down at my body. Maybe he had me go swing the golf, like a golf club or something. And I'm standing there and he's just staring at me, like literally like a lion about to pounce on a pound of meat. He goes, where are you from? And I said, I'm from Kansas City. It was Kansas City. I said, yeah, where are you from? And he goes, Pittsburgh. And I said, Pittsburgh? He goes, yeah, you got a problem with Pittsburgh? And I said, well, no, but it seems like you have a problem with Kansas City. He's kind of have a problem with Kansas City. Why do you think I have a problem with Kansas City? And I said, well, because I said where I was from and you were like judgmental about it. Yes, I wasn't judgmental about it. He goes, what's your problem? And I go, well, I don't have a problem. And I'm like, oh my God, it's happening. Like, she warned me that this could happen. And I've just been, I'm engaged. Now I'm in an argument with the guy who like is maybe hiring me. So he's like, get the fuck out of here. And like literally said it like that. And I'm like, I leave. And I'm like, I call her. And I said, well, I guess I screwed that moment up. I guess I didn't heed your warning. She's like, what happened? I said, well, we got into an argument about where I was from. Like, she's like, what did you do? What did you do? I said, I didn't do anything. I just answered his question. Well, long story short, like a day later, she calls me and she's like, you are not going to believe this. And I said, what? She said, you are not getting that American Express commercial. And I said, well, yeah, clearly. She goes, but Joe Pitka had his casting director call back and say, he can't wait to work with you on something. And I was like, so confused. And then a month later, I get a phone call that says, show up in the Long Beach Harbor. You're in an IBM commercial with Joe Pitka. And that was the beginning of our run.
Wow.
Incredible.
That is unbelievable. How many did you end up doing with him?
This is going to sound so ridiculous, what I'm about to say, but it's like a couple campaigns, but it was like almost 60. And he would just call. And listen, I have talked about him when I've been asked, you know, for comments about acting and things like that. I just had dinner with him a month ago here in Los Angeles, and he doesn't like to hear this because he's this guy, you know, he's Polish from Pittsburgh. He's stubborn and he's bullheaded and he's, you know, he is him. But I'm like, Joe, you have to acknowledge my appreciation and my thankfulness to you because you taught me so much about like working under pressure. You taught me so much about like being prepared. You taught me so much about being patient and like confident in your abilities. And like you, but more than anything, you gave me the ability to go into these theatrical auditions with the confidence that I had somebody outside of this room that's going to hire me for something. And like, you don't know what that means to an actor to know that like, I'm not walking in with desperation on my brow. It's like, fuck you. Like, no, I'm serious. You need to know that you mean a tremendous amount to my career and that I wouldn't be where I ended up being without you. And that's all I'm going to say about it.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Good. He's a good guy. I just figured out his shtick, man. I mean, he is tough, but he just appreciated that I, in that room, that first moment that I engaged him and that I wasn't like whimpering. And that was his test. His test was like, well, can you work with me on set when there's 10 hours of time we've wasted and we got to get the shot in 1 minute. Can right. you be that person? And that's what he kind of puts people through.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road. But if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Ready to start your new journey? Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Enjoy Zyn nicotine pouches for 10 days and discover a fresher way to experience nicotine satisfaction anywhere, anytime. Here's how to get started with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Simply pick your strength and varieties online and check out. Once your Zyn nicotine pouches arrive in the mail, enjoy pure nicotine satisfaction at your leisure. After your 10-day trial, let us know what you think. If Zyn isn't for you, no hard feelings. It's that simple. Order online at Zyn.com, that's Zyn.com, to start your new journey today with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents.
Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco-Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say free this week into your Xfinity voice remote.
My next guest found herself with an incredible opportunity to take a leading role on what would eventually become a true cult classic, Freaks and Geeks. But if the stars had aligned differently, she would have listened to all of the people telling her to pass. I'm happy to say that she had her own motivations, because otherwise she may not have been so busy these last few decades. Okay, that was bad. That was bad. I'm blaming that on the writers. Here she is, Busy Phillips, everyone.
I went to pick up, I think, Colin at the airport, and Linda was also there picking up her roommate, actually. And she had just gotten the part, and she knew that they wanted me for Kim Kelly. And she was like, dude, can you believe it? I got Freaks and Geeks. I'm going to do it. You got to be Kim Kelly. And I was like, I know. I was just talking. It's so exciting. Like, my agents are feeling like, I don't know. And she's like, no, do this show. You got to do this with me. It'll be so much fun. We'll have so much fun. And I honestly, in that moment, I was like, yeah, of course I'm fucking doing it. Like, why would I not do? I already know this girl who's rad and like, right. I want to be best friends with anyway. Why would I not do this? And so I called my manager, Lorraine, and I was like, I really want to do this. And she's like, I'm going to call Judd. I'm going to find out what the deal is. And then she called me back and she was like, you know, Judd is really insistent that they want to make this character a series regular if the show gets picked up. I think you should just do it. I think it's brilliant. And so because of like Lorraine, my manager at the time, and Linda Cardellini, I was like, I had no idea what I was doing. Who knows what anything is, you know?
Right.
So they're like, Judd Apatow from Sick in the Head. I'm sure. Like, I don't know what the fuck that is. Like, right. I'm 19. No,
of course. Right. Of course. Had you read the script?
Yeah.
You have.
I did not understand it at all. I'm not going to lie. Brian, tonally, I was like, don't get it. I don't get what the tone of this is. I was so confused by it. And then I remember they cut together. We had a pretty long shoot for the pilot. I mean, it's a period piece and it's involved. And those were the olden days of Hollywood where they really spent a ton of money and like they were shooting on film, you know?
Right.
And after we wrapped the pilot that evening in the cafeteria of the school we were shooting at, they rolled out like a little AV cart. And they had cut together, the editors had just put together like a tiny little mishmash of the show for all of us to see what we'd been working on, which honestly, also in retrospect, is so special because so frequently.
That is so cool.
Yeah. If your show doesn't get picked up, the crew literally never sees the show.
Right.
I mean, I don't know about you. I've done pilots that I still haven't seen.
Right. Right. I've done shows that I've never seen, but that's a different issue.
I would say. But anyway, it was so special. And I remember watching this thing that they put together and they had the Come Sail Away song, you know, like crescendoing. And I got full chills and I was like, this is what we've been doing. Oh my God. This is real. Like, I'm going to start crying, but like, my little brain was blown. Like, this is what I've wanted to do since I was a baby. And there I am. And I don't even look like me. And I don't sound like me. And it's real. Yeah, that was that.
Wow. Were you aware at that moment that the show was special or doing something new? Or did your little brain not comprehend that at the time?
I mean, that whole experience has had so many different incarnations of what it was and what it is and what it continues to be. So it's funny, you know, like we had such an amazing time while we were doing it. And the freedom that Judd and Paul and Leslie Glatter, like all of our directors, they gave us such a gift that we were all way too inexperienced and young to understand at the in the moment, I think. But we all enjoyed it very much. I mean, I don't remember, aside from like my personality conflict with Franco, like I don't remember ever having like a complaint about anything having to do with it. Late nights were super fun. Early mornings were super fun. We would hang out. We would go to Swingers and get food at midnight after we wrapped, like together. We would go to Birds on Franklin.
Sure.
Where Siegel convinced me that the Scientology building had a Tower of Terror ride inside of it. And I believed him for like 10 minutes. I really thought it was true. And Seth was like, come on. It's not true. And I was like, I don't know. It looks like it has one of those rides in it, you know, like a drop. I was like, what? We don't know. Anyway. Wow. So it was really fun, you know? And I think, and when the show was over and it became clear, like, that it was going to be over, I wasn't ready for it to be, and I wanted it to continue. I was really, really sad and really disheartened. And I did feel in that moment already like, but we made something so good. Right. Why is this fair? I mean, and again, that's the best lesson you can learn as an actor. It's like, right. It actually doesn't matter, babe.
Right. Paul said it was ahead of its time a little bit. Yeah. I mean, in terms of the cringe comedy, I mean, you know, Judd's now made a career out of very similar toned things. It launched so many careers and really pioneered a new way of doing television that is, you know, I think a lot of shows, including The Office, owe a great debt of gratitude to.
I remember feeling that it was ahead of its time. Like I said, like I read it and didn't understand it.
Right.
You know,
right.
I didn't understand tonally what it was supposed to be. It wasn't until I actually saw it that I was like, oh, shit, this right. is awesome. And I think it's really a testament to how the people in charge treated us with so much respect. And we were kids and maybe at moments didn't deserve it. But they really treated us like experts in our field and real collaborators in making this thing. And it changes everything when you get to work with people who respect you.
Yeah.
I've been on both sides of that like line where I've worked for people who just definitely don't respect me. And right. I'm there to like service what they want to be done or how they want it said. And I have, no joke, heard actors like that I was working with being referenced as talking props.
Yeah.
Whew, that's a bummer. Yeah, you know, that like really takes the fun out of it. But like for me to go from doing really fun, creative theater programs and then getting to be a part of a show, a network television show where these adults in charge. And by the way, that is the funniest thing to me, which is that I thought that Judd and Leslie were literally 50 years old. Leslie is like 3 years older than me. Like, right. we're essentially the same age. Yeah,
exactly.
But she was like, they were like married, they had a baby, they right. were like old people. And right. And then like cut to 5 years later, we're like hanging out with each other in Hawaii. And I'm like, wait, what's happening? We're the same. Oh my God.
Oh my God is right. That is hilarious. Busy. Speaking of working with people when they're young and then running into them again as adults, one of my next guests started out with a pretty surprising role on The Office. And then he went on to be on a tiny little show called Glee with his friend Jenna. Here they are, Kevin McHale and Jenna Uskowitz.
Kevin, I actually met you before Jenna. You mm-hmm. were a very significant guest star on The Office when you were 17-ish
yeah.
years of age. How was that experience for you? The delivery boy, I believe was your title, pizza delivery boy from Alfredo's. What was that experience like for you, and how much experience did you have at that time in film and television? It sounds like not a lot.
Not a lot. It was, I think, my second guest star thing ever. The other one was Zoe 101 on Nickelodeon.
Wow.
And yeah, it was a really, really big thing for me. The audition process was unlike anything I'd ever experienced, where the callbacks, we were in the room with Steve and he came in and read with us.
Oh, wow.
You know, Steve Carell. I'll just say Steve. I was dying. I was so terrified.
Really? Oh, were you now? Were you a fan of the show?
Oh yeah, okay. I was a fan of the UK version. Like I was all about it. And Allison Jones, the casting director, is probably the only reason why I've had any sort of career, because she, when no one else did, kept giving me chances on everything. So I got really close in Superbad. Aww. If you get on TV and you become semi-recognizable, you get to skip a couple rounds of auditioning and you just get brought into the later rounds. I didn't have any reason to get brought into automatically to later rounds for things. She just started doing that for me because somehow she believed in me, and I really took that to heart and made me feel better when I would go into these rooms that she would bring me into. But yeah, I went in and auditioned with Steve and got it, and I screamed and was freaking out. And then all of you were just so, so awful. No, so nice.
I knew you were going to say that.
Because I was so intimidated, obviously, coming in there. It's like, these are these professional adults, and they're all talented and funny. And I felt like, you know, severe case of imposter syndrome. And everyone went out of their way to make me feel comfortable, to make me feel like I deserved to be there, every one of you. And it was just really, really great. And also, what a great gig you guys had. Because, I mean, Jenna, those sets were pre-lit.
Oh my God.
The way they could set up something so quickly. They were on their own. They had their own stage. Oh God, it was the dream.
Yeah.
So you ruined it for anything else, because
I feel like you also got still.
Oh, I get recognized from the office so often from that one episode, and it's absolute. I don't know how you go anywhere, because I was in one episode, and
you still do. I can't, by the way, but you still do.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
That's a lot crazy, because I went back and looked at those pictures, and you do look quite different.
Yeah,
I mean, you are older. Let's be clear.
Yeah,
so am I. I guess that's how time works. I'll explain it to you later. Wow. Well, that is very, very interesting. Yeah, I don't know that I would have thought that with everything that's come after.
Still.
So, you guys, to say the least, you have a very diverse training and backgrounds. Talk to me about Glee. How did the opportunities come up for both of you? Were these just auditions first off?
Yes. Yeah, regular just audition.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And what did you have to do? Obviously, did you have to dance as well as sing as well as act? You did not.
No. Yeah. And they realized that was probably a mistake later on. I had to bring in some people who could dance. Yeah.
They're like, nobody can dance?
Yeah, not one. Not even everybody can sing.
I was in Spring Awakening at the time, and it was the same casting director, Jim Carnahan, in New York, who cast Spring Awakening, was also casting the New York side of Glee. And so we had it was all a buzz in the theater, and they were like, oh, there's this new musical theater TV show that's coming out, and everybody got brought in for it.
Right.
The pilot also was like, some of these characters, like Artie and Tina, were pretty nonspecific. And so I went in, and everybody went in, and we didn't have to sing for our first audition because they were like, I guess you're on Broadway. I guess you can sing. So I didn't have to sing in my first call. I just went on tape.
And just read lines like at any other show.
Yeah, yeah. And literally Tina's only line was a stutter. And she said, and that's it. That was my entire first audition. Well.
God, that's all you did? They didn't give you anything else?
Nope.
I don't even think I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
That's it?
That was it.
Wow.
Well, I'm not going to say anything bad, but that they got to be more creative than that. This is poor people. Okay. Yeah, I mean, literally by a weird stutter on one day, your entire life could be changed.
Yeah,
sliding truly. Doors. Check out the movie. So, Kevin, what about you? Well, now you're in a boy band.
That's right.
Does that mean that they knew that you could sing, or did you have to sing?
They sure did not know I could sing.
Okay.
So we had to sing. You'd prepare a song. I read the script before. I remember I brought two friends with me. I was like, oh, this show shoots in New York. I don't know why I thought that.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. I had it probably mixed up with something else.
Mm.
And I went in and auditioned. And it wasn't an audition room. It was in Robert Ulrich who casted it. It was like in his office. And I just sat on the other side of the desk from him. And it was one of those places where the walls are really thin so you can hear what everybody is doing.
Ulrich Dawson Kritzer. Is this what you're talking about?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh my God, those walls are really thin.
They're paper thin. And so
it's so awkward.
Yeah.
That's what casting directors.
It's awkward on a good day when there's no singing.
Yeah. Right. Oh, with singing.
Brutal.
I would die.
And that's how I felt because I, one, have terrible nerves auditioning, hate auditioning, and then having to sing. Like the first thing to like go when you get nervous is your voice. Like your vocal cords just freeze up. And then you can hear what everybody's doing. It's just so embarrassing, mortifying. So I went in there. I sang Let It Be. I
never heard of it.
Let It Be. It's a new song. These indie artists. I intentionally only prepared like a verse and a chorus because the song is so slow. So I was like, I'm not going to bore them to death. Let me do this. Then I get to the end of the chorus and Robert goes, like, keep going.
Keep going.
I'm like, I'm a fake fan. I don't know the second verse of this.
Oh, no.
And so I don't know what I did. I think I sort of stumbled through singing this first verse again and then went into the chorus again because I knew that.
Wow.
And then I did the scenes. And then immediately, which also never happens, he's like, okay, so when you come back and start talking about the next audition, I was like,
oh,
what?
That's nice.
Okay, great. And then I went back 2 days later to Ryan's office at Paramount, and it went from being at Robert's desk to a boardroom, basically. It was a full table of 15 people.
Right.
You know, in this gigantic room. Brad Ellis, who ended up being on the show and playing the piano, he was there. We went early to practice our songs with him, and I prepared two songs this time. Ended up still doing Let It Be. And yeah, it was the full. I learned the words.
Did you? Yeah,
I was prepared this time.
The second verse. Okay.
Yeah, I was so. It wasn't that I was. I don't think I was good at playing the character. I was just so nervous that that's what Artie became. Because I did the song, the nerves were Artie, and then I literally ran out of the room, and that was. It like I think wow. Ian Brennan, who's one of the creators of the show later, he told me, he was like, yeah, we knew from that immediately we wanted you, but I had to wait 7 weeks to test because they hadn't found anybody else yet.
Oh my god.
Wow.
If you're a smoker or dipper looking to make a change, you really only need one reason to do it. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you can find many. Not only did Zyn create the first ever nicotine pouch, we're still America's number one choice for smoke-free, spit-free nicotine satisfaction. It could be because Zyn is made with only 6 simple ingredients, including naturally derived nicotine salt. Or maybe it's because Zyn is the only nicotine pouch with a 10-day trial. For anyone worried Zyn won't cut it like traditional tobacco, just ask one of the millions of people who have achieved lasting change. You have lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Find your Zyn online or in a store near you at zyn.com/find. That's zyn.com/find. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro? Amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
All right, folks, my next guest comes from one of my absolute all-time favorite shows, as you know, The Sopranos. So I, of course, very excited to have her on. But before we go into her interview, I want you to consider this incredibly difficult dilemma. If you were being offered a role on The Sopranos, but your grandma was making chicken cutlets that weren't quite ready, would you go to your audition or would you wait for the food? I guess that you'll just have to wait and see what she chose. Here's Drea DiMatteo on what it was like rolling up for her audition.
I wore no makeup with my hair in a bun and pull back, slick back, you know, because they say just be a blank canvas for them. And I said, sure. And I show up like that. And now they want me to play the saucy, you know, what would be a Queens girl. And I was like, Jesus Christ, I know how to do that. But I'm not prepared because I don't have the hair or the makeup. And I can't put on that accent without it. And I didn't get the part. I auditioned for Michael's girlfriend and I didn't get the part, but he lied to me and he made me read for every other side character. I read for the Russian girls. I read for, I can't remember. There were like four roles that I read for in that script and I got none of them. And then they finally called my agent at that time and said, she seems like a snooty Connecticut girl. Would she be okay playing the hostess in the restaurant who turns down Lorraine Bracco? And I was like, you have me at Lorraine Bracco, I'll be there. Right. And I couldn't say my lines because I was so nervous. I was with Karen from fucking Goodfellas. I couldn't say my lines at all. I was dying. It was her. It was she and Jim. And I didn't know Jim and nobody knew Jim yet, really.
Right.
So I didn't care about him, but I definitely cared about her. And I couldn't say any of my lines. And then a year later, they would call me back to play Michael's girlfriend again, his date, just a date. I'm like, why are they calling me back? I messed up. I don't think they knew that I was the same girl. I don't think they knew. Or maybe they did. I don't even know. I don't know if I ever even asked that question. But according to Eileen, one of the producers, I got the part as his girl. It was a day player role and another day player part on the show.
Right.
Because of the way I said the word ow. I had one line. It was ow. And she said I turned it into a 10-syllable word. Because I had no idea. My mom told me to say it that way. I was at my mom's house when they called. Yeah, I was at my mom's house when they called to come in the second time. And I said, hey, mom, it's that show. It's that Sopranos show that I told you about, but I had given her the pilot to read. She goes, Dre, this is gold. She's like, this is the most unbelievable script I've ever read in TV. It read like one of her scripts.
Right.
And I looked at her and I said, yeah, it'll probably never get made. She said, probably not. It's too good. And that was that. And then a year later, they called me at their house and said, hey, can you come in for an audition? I said, no, I can't. Actually, I'm in Queens. And they said, that's funny. So are we. Can you be here in a half hour? And I was like, I looked at my mom and I go, how quick are those chicken cutlets going to be done? My grandma's making chicken cutlets. My grandmother goes, come on, I'll make you a chicken cutlet sandwich. Just get in the car and go. My mother goes, I'm going to get your nameplate and diamonds out of the safe. You need to wear it. Because I have this Andrea and diamonds on a rope chain from my confirmation. She goes, you're going to wear that. You go tease your hair, go put makeup on and talk like Silvana, my neighbor. And I was like, okay, let's go. And then I went with my parents in the car. They were waiting for me in the car. I ran into Silver Cup Studios, which was in Queens.
Yeah.
And I gave my audition and I came back out and I ate my chicken cutlet sandwich. And then I got the fucking part. And it was just for one line though. You know, I still have my checks from those, my $500 checks.
Wow.
From my first day player role, sitting on my, I remember sitting in the honey wagon. I know a lot of people don't know what a honey wagon is, but a honey wagon is a trailer you see when all the trailers are parked that have the tiniest little rooms ever. So you know, like, the main actors are not in the honey wagon. They're little toilets. There are rooms with toilets with a pillow on the toilet so you can sit on your toilet while you're waiting to be called up. That's right. A honey wagon. So I would be sitting on my in my honey wagon, sitting on the toilet every time I got a script because they kept bringing me back, which I thought was super cool. And I remember being at Craft Services, David Chase coming over to me and he goes, you know, people in the editing room really think that you're a couple with Michael. And I said, really? And he's like, yeah, you guys have really great chemistry. And I looked at him and I was like, must be the eyebrows. Because we both have big eyebrows, you know, joking around. Then by episode 12, man, I'm sitting on my toilet, sitting on my toilet in the honey wagon, and I was in 12 scenes and I lost my shit and I ran to a payphone because that's all we had. And I ran to a payphone with my script and I called my mom, collect, and I said, Mom, you won't believe it. 12 fucking scenes. Come on. That was a, the scene that the, that episode, the music industry stuff. And
yep.
That was it. I was on my way to becoming series regular. But I always tell people I never would have gotten that part if they were auditioning for a series regular. Because, it, you know, there were Mira Sorvino, Marissa Tomei, Debbie Mazar. All those girls would have been the perfect actors for those roles. You know what I mean? So I got really fucking lucky.
That you did, Drea. And speaking of getting really lucky, my next guest just happened to audition for what would become one of, if not the biggest improv groups in the country, launching him into a beautiful career. Here he is to tell you all about it, Rob Corddry.
You get back to New York. Now, at this point, you're a serious Shakespearean actor.
Yeah.
And then you get involved with what was at the time this little improv group, UCB, Upright Citizens Brigade. How did you discover this group, and why, as a serious actor, did you pursue wanting to do stuff with them?
That's a good question. You know, I realized the one thing I wasn't doing well, the one thing I wasn't taught in college, it was just seemed to be a crapshoot, was auditioning. And so I learned how to audition by, I taught myself by just going out over and over and over again. And I, you know, got my 10,000, I was auditioning for everything in backstage. And one of them just happened to be a sketch group. You know, I'd be a performance artist in Berlin right now if it worked out a different way. Just happened to be a sketch group. And then that, when I got into the sort of comedy scene and, or at least got a view of it, because we were pretty outside this sketch group, the UCB were just starting to gain prominence. They were just starting to teach classes. They were starting their takeover. I believe they had taught one class of students, and I thought, I was under the impression that it was Andy Richter's sketch group.
Okay.
So I went and saw an ASCAT, which is their, was their weekly show. And Andy Richter happened to be performing. So I don't know when I stopped believing it was his. But, you know, then I got in to a class at the very, it's the only thing I've gotten in on the ground floor of.
Okay.
You know, when they were the four original UCB guys are still teaching classes in a five-story walk-up ballet studio in Manhattan. And I just stuck with it. I loved it. I was terrified of it. You know, okay. improv still terrifies me to this day. I was doing it for the skill, to learn this skill, to be comfortable, for confidence, and for, like, you know, and also for the community. I made a lot of great friends there, and we then branched out and did other things, as you know.
Yeah. You said it terrifies you.
Yeah.
There's no
lines, Brian.
Yeah,
you gotta make them up.
I know. Yes, And that's terrifying.
It's stupid. Shakespeare's got all planned out for you.
Right. You just follow the map and you're going to get there.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. So I have, by the way, zero improv training. Uh-huh. And it sounds like, much like you, I stayed on the serious theater track longer. But I, you know, so I was doing comedy. I was doing dramatic role. I was doing different stuff. I never did improv. I never.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never studied it. I didn't take the classes. And I don't know if that maybe for me is why I don't find it as challenging somehow.
Oh, yes. Know. That is exactly why. Because you haven't been in a position where you've had to think about it too much.
Right.
Yeah.
Like now I feel like, because people are saying like, oh, okay, we're going to improv. Yeah. I'm like, okay.
No, great. That's fine. I also on a set, it's a little bit more safe,
different,
right?
Because
it's really just like, you're just trying to find something. And also you sometimes go in with a couple things. You got a couple ideas, which you would never do in improv.
Don't try to act like you know me.
Oh, you do. Come on, Brian. Everybody knows. You're like, oh, I'm going to improvise this and I'm going to improvise that. But even like going in, that's kind of easy. Like, just because you're just playing the scene that is written.
Actually,
a different version.
Yes. Actually, that's a really good point because it is for me. And I do, you know, I'm not going to say I write a book on my character or, you know, have a fully developed, you know, history or whatever, but I begin to understand who that character is. Mm-hmm. And once you know, if you're given a situation, which is improv, but along with that, given a character who has these certain characteristics, it all begins to fill in much easier.
And you know what the scene is about. You've already memorized the lines, the actual scene. So you know what the scene is about. You know what the game is.
Yes.
So basically you're just subbing in things or adding jokes that the writers might have missed.
Yes.
You're just trying to make it a little bit better, you know? And usually it's not as good, but sometimes it is.
When you start working with those guys, you also created your own sketch comedy group, The Naked Babies. You spent a couple of years with Third Rail Comedy. I mean, at this point, do you feel like, and this is kind of a weird question, but do you feel like your career, your focus is now fully changed to this? Yes.
Yeah. I still had, there was still this part of me that wanted, maybe I'll go back to the theater someday, but I'm doing comedy now. I have found what I do best.
Okay.
I have once again lucked into this sort of, I found the end of the maze. But, you know, nowadays, like I always still harbored a dream that I would be on Broadway someday.
Okay.
Now that it's maybe even a possibility, I could probably, you know, if I made myself, you know, really worked at it, I would dread that. it's so hard.
Right.
Who's got time for Broadway? It's like, it's so much work.
It's so much work. It's you know, and that was what it was for me. I mean, the 8 shows a week, you have off on Monday. Nobody has Monday off. Like, what do you know, that the life is very difficult.
Dismal. Oh my God.
2001, you got what you hoped would be your first big break. This is what I was told. A commercial with Carrot Top. What do you remember about that?
I don't know. It was definitely my first big on, you know, television network commercial. And so by break, I guess it was a break in terms of just cash. Like, this thing was going to go out there and I was going to be able to quit one of my day jobs and live as an actor, actually be an actor and make money at it. So I did this and it was a car. And yeah, I did a 1-800 call ATT commercial
in
which, and then, about a month later, 9/11 happened. So it ran for about a week. 9/11 happened, and they pulled the commercial because in the commercial, Carrot Top hijacks a tour bus in New York.
No.
Yeah. So that went away.
Wow. That is quite the coincidence. Rob, but glad to see you made it back. Okay. By the way, I am still trying to find that Carrot Top commercial. My final guest for the day also spent his early days with a mic in hand. Well, maybe it was a hairbrush or a bottle or a broom head. I don't know. It's all the same thing, right? Let's just say he made lip syncing cool long before TikTok. Here's Kevin Pollak with the unconventional way that he got his start in comedy.
You started doing stand-up at age 10?
Well, sure. First for family and then eventually at school. Yeah, it was just lip syncing a comedy album at 10. That was the act.
Okay. It was lip sync. What comedy album?
Well, if only he had put in the liner notes of his comedy album that he would go on to be the most prolific serial rapist from show business in history, maybe I wouldn't have chosen that one, but that wasn't in the liner notes. So it was Bill Cosby's first album.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. What was it that attracted you to it, performing in that way?
Oh, my mom brought home his first album, and I watched my parents laugh uncontrollably, listening to the stories coming from the stereo hi-fi, which back then was a 7-foot-wide piece of furniture. Right. Compare that to the tiny devices we use now.
That you hold in your pocket, right?
Yeah, or just shove into your ears. But watching my folks laughing uncontrollably like that, it was a first, and it was as off-putting or awkward as watching them openly weep. I mean, it really was strange. Not that they never laughed. It's just they never laughed at someone talking from the stereo. So when no one was around, I just listened to it a lot more because I wanted to be that person telling the stories, making my parents laugh.
Right.
I think that was the obsession. And then I would race home after school and listen to it. And eventually standing in front of the stereo, pretending I was the one telling the stories, not knowing that A, lip syncing was a thing. So I wasn't trying to lip sync.
Right.
Nor did I think I was inventing lip syncing. I didn't even know the term. I was just playing. There was no interactive games. We had just invented fire. This was a while ago, Brian. So there I was. And my mother came home and quote unquote caught me. And I used that term because it was as if I was as embarrassed as if she caught me doing something else. So then she laughed, pointed at me and said, "You're doing that for the Zookers at Passover." So my first live show
was for the Zookers.
Was on the white painted out fireplace shelving in front of the fireplace. Stood on that and performed for 20 relatives at Passover and crushed, Brian. I just
you killed it.
Killed. Well, and I went on to do it at school and other functions, but you know, it was a 10-year-old precocious Jewish kid lip-syncing this hilarious comedy bit. I didn't write the material. I didn't even perform it, really. But, you know, I cleared my throat the same moment he does on the album and those little things from a 10-year-old. Forget it.
Right.
So I just killed. I killed constantly. And I did that act, I'm going to say, for another 5 years. At every function at school, be it a folk festival, a father-daughter dinner dance, you know, whatever the events were. There's Kevin and the Noah in the Ark routine. I mean, I was mesmerized by all the comedy albums of the day. And when friends would gather, I would be quoting the album. And then I realized, oh, I guess I need my own material. And but I was a natural at doing impersonations. And then that became the cornerstone of what I would call an act. At 17. Is when I performed professionally in a nightclub.
Did you inherently feel the comedy in the rhythms?
Yes.
Or in the, you felt it?
Yeah. And the Noah in the Ark routine in particular is just Noah talking to God because Noah's confused about how to build the ark. And it's as G-rated as comedy gets. And then once I think dialed into the story, I organically or involuntarily picked up the comedy rhythms. So I learned timing from this Jedi master through osmosis. And then I think the impersonations was just a natural thing, but also it taught me how to act. I learned acting nuances from the nuances that I went on to create while doing an impersonation.
Okay. Talk to me a little bit about that, meaning different people's timing, depending on who you were imitating, you started to assimilate all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I learned from watching actors and then impersonating them. So I would implement what I thought were gestures and nuance and line readings, because I was speaking finally. Then I learned to act on the set of movies. I never attended an acting class. I'm not proud of that. I never studied at university. In fact, I graduated from San Jose State University in 9 months. My friends called it dropping out, but I was done. I was done. And
you finished.
Yeah.
I finished in nine months.
There was no ceremony. I didn't need a little hat with a tassel. I was done.
All right, folks, with that, we're done too. I hope you've enjoyed today's look back at some of the phenomenal guests we've gotten to hear from this last year. And more importantly, I hope you all have an absolutely perfect and magical holiday. I'm going to be back next week with the second of my best of episodes. But until then, I'll be enjoying some nog, maybe sitting around the Christmas tree, humming a tune and roasting chestnuts. I don't know, but I hope you get to spend some time with your loved ones this holiday season. Happy holidays to you and yours. Off the Beat is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Ling Lee. Our senior producer is Diego Tapia. Our producers are Liz Hayes, Hannah Harris, and Emily Carr. Our talent producer is Ryan Papa Zachary, and our intern is Sammy Katz. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by the one and only Creed Bratton.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road. But if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge and enjoy 10 smoke-free, spit-free days for just $5.95. Order online and start your new journey today. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.